The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Matt Wells, and this is Media Talk, coming up in this week's podcast. As Kevin Spacey lays into the BBC for crossing the line with its West End talent searches, we ask, how do you solve a problem like the Beeb? Also in the show...
Good morning. This is Today with John Humphreys and Evan Davis.
Evan sent, we review the first week on the job for the Today programme's latest recruit. Plus, has Rupert Murdoch just been given the green light to launch Fox News in Britain? And... they're back. We look at the return of Ricky and Bianca to Albert Square. All this and more coming up on Media Talk from The Guardian. In the week, it was announced that style columnist Tyler Brulé is returning to the Financial Times. We have two of the pod's own stylistas back on microphone duty. Returning from his Easter holidays is the always sartorially savvy media analyst and Media Guardian columnist Steve Hewlett. Hello, Steve.
Hello.
Also, a fabulous shirt, by the way.
Thank you.
Also in the studio...
It's new.
This is a new one. Also in the studio, a man with not one but three purple shirts in his wardrobe, John Plunkett, radio correspondent for MediaGuardian.co.uk.
Hello, Matt. Today I'm mostly wearing Primark.
Very smart Primark. Now, listen, I know that you're both huge fans of West End musicals, especially you, Steve. So sit back and enjoy. Actually, we can't play any more of that due to copyright restrictions.
Oh, please, Matt, can I have some more?
No, you can't have some more. Now, the reason for that marvellous skit is because Kevin Spacey, the double Oscar winner, serial dog walker and current artistic director of the Old Vic, this week caused a mini media storm after having a go at the BBC. He says that the corporation's hunt for West End stars in Saturday night programmes like I'd Do Anything and Any Dream Will Do have created an unlevel playing field, so to speak, in theatre land. Here he is talking to the BBC.
I have a bit of a complaint about the BBC. I felt that that was essentially a 13-week promotion for a musical. And I felt that, you know, where's our 13-week programme? When are they going to do one about a play? I've spoken to your chairman, but he has yet to get back to me about it. You're not a commercial operation, and I thought it was crossing the line.
Steve, let me come to you first. I mean, this is a serious issue, isn't it? But you've talked about the sorts of things that are raised by Kevin Spacey before to do with cross-promotion and commercial promotion, I should say.
I mean, I may be wrong about this, but I sort of think that once upon a time the BBC would have felt some sort of basic internal sense of reservation about what amounts to... effectively a pretty shameless promotion for somebody else's commercial venture. I mean, on ITV, it would almost have to be considered under the kind of undue prominence rules, you know, for what references are allowed to be made about commercial operations inside programmes. I mean, it appears pretty commercial, I have to say.
John, the counter-argument is, of course, that these programmes are very popular.
They are. They make great TV. And I guess if the top prize wasn't to star in a big hit West End show... not as many people would enter it and not as many people would watch it. I think it's just a shame that it has to be Andrew Lloyd Webber's show that that the programme plugs
well,
that people end up in.
This is interesting because the first two shows, how can you solve a problem like Maria, and then the other one whose name I've forgotten, but they were Andrew Lloyd Webber shows. But the latest one, Oliver, isn't an Andrew Lloyd Webber show. Cameron McIntosh. And apparently the BBC told Andrew Lloyd Webber that the next one they're going to do Jesus Christ Superstar, next time, but this one had to be a different,
well,
it couldn't be his.
In that case, maybe Kevin Spacey will get his chance then. Buggins' turn, is it now? So whatever business you happen to be in,
yes.
If you wait long enough, the BBC will come and promote you.
What could they call it? Drama queen, perhaps. It's interesting, though, that Kevin Spacey's argument did seem to be that he didn't have an argument with the principle of it. He wanted one for himself.
I think one does have to remember that they are, as you know, as John says, they are spectacularly popular programmes. People really enjoy them. And there's a sense of jeopardy, you know, created in part by the fact that it's a big West End musical, not a kind of Churchill performance. That's true. I just think, I say, there was just something, as one watched it unfold, it was just something about sort of, and, you know, and you can see the commercial results of it. I don't suppose, I'm not saying that Andrew...
Well, it's a smash hit musical.
Well, most of his musicals, as far as I'm aware, tend to work, which is why he is who he is and where he's got to. So it's not as if he's been turned from kind of zero to hero by the BBC's intervention, but... you know, it certainly made it a less risky proposition by having a 13-part BBC series running up to it.
John, the BBC loves a bit of self-flagellation, so it was interesting to watch the BBC's news bulletins covering this programme with glee on Monday.
Yeah, that's right. And I thought also the BBC's response saying that we do make every effort to mention other Western musicals in our shows was...
other Western musicals are available.
I wasn't quite sure about that, but I wish Kevin Spacey hadn't mentioned that they should also bring back Play for Today, because that almost kind of punctures his argument a bit, because I think broadcasting has moved on a bit since then, and he kind of suffered slightly from the old fart syndrome there, which kind of punctured his argument just a tiny bit.
Well, yes and no. I mean, look, having read it just now, you know, I was sort of sunning myself on a beach just 24 hours ago, so blissfully unaware that Kevin Spacey had done anything worthy of note in the last week, but nevertheless, he does have a point here. Leaving sort of old fartdom behind for a moment, and leaving behind the sense that things were always better then than they are now.
Parrish thought that you might be yourself
indeed.
Be, you know...
That is below the belt. But anyway,
portrayed
before
as...
we get round to that,
yes.
I mean, there is something about the way that television now operates that does militate against, you know, single pieces. It's true in documentary, it's true in drama, whether they should be plays or not. Well, until I read this, you know, Boys from the Black Stuff started off as a play for today. Now, once upon a time, television, because of its peculiar roots, you know, was a vehicle for the individual voice. And it still is sometimes. We're all thrilled when Paul Watson comes along and makes a sort of, or Molly Deneen makes a groundbreaking documentary. And don't get me wrong, there are some brilliant documentaries around. I sat on a jury for the RTS recently looking at, well, I chaired it, about a single documentary jury. And it was notable the number of 90-minute films that popped up for consideration, which really weren't any good. And I came to the conclusion, having thought about it, that what was happening was people, channel controllers, were sort of ticking the documentary box by doing one big 90-minute film. Whether the film itself was worth it or the filmmaker could manage it was neither here nor there. They could say, we've done a big film. When actually, most of the people who one now looks to with, you know, anticipation for documentaries of real clout all cut their teeth on strands of single documentaries, which are pretty hard to find.
Is there an argument, John, that these sorts of shows, not single documentaries, but going back to the Andrew Lloyd Webber sort of stuff, should be left to ITV?
I think possibly this... Lloyd Webber's hinted that this might be the last one, or the last but one. But I think probably after three of them, I think probably it's time to call it a day.
The ITV has their own version, don't they? The Grease thing, which didn't do very well.
It didn't work so well. No.
Look, I think in this case, I think the horse has bolted. I think right. Things have moved on. I think the other point he makes, though, although having read it, I'm not sure this is what he intended to say. The other consequence of what he says, which is that there is less room on TV for the individual voice. There's less place for the individual voice to develop and to find its feet, and for, you know, for the next Potter to become Potter, as it were. That's undeniably true.
We'll come back to BBC issues a bit later on when we talk about public service broadcasting review that's coming up, and a few things that Andy Burnham has been saying about regional news on ITV a bit later on. If you want to have your say on this story, leave a comment on the blog on Organ Grinder or post something on our Facebook wall. I'm Matt Wells. You're listening to Media Talk. Still to come, we'll analyse Global's acquisition of GCAP and the impact on the UK radio landscape. Plus...
He looks like a man, but he's a legend. And his name is the Doctor.
Gareth McLean will join us as we look ahead to the new season of Doctor Who. Very exciting, starting on Saturday. And we'll round up the rest of this week's television news. That's all coming up. But first, let's take a look at some of the other media stories making the headlines over the past 7 days in Good Week, Bad Week.
It's been an excellent week for Rupert Murdoch. First, Tory leader David Cameron launched a new policy promising to scrap those tedious old impartiality rules for all news broadcasters apart from the BBC, thus giving the green light to Fox News-style shock jockery on our screens. News Corp also began its global expansion of the Wall Street Journal this week by launching the paper's US edition here in the UK. It means London readers will have access to the title several hours before it goes on sale in America. If you're that way inclined, you'll be able to buy the paper at around 250 newsagents in the City, West End and Canary Wharf, as well as Heathrow. Well, something to do to pass the time while you wait for your luggage, I suppose. There's been more criticism for the BBC. This time, Ben Elton's accused the organisation of being too scared to allow jokes about Islam. Elton, who co-wrote critically acclaimed sitcoms such as The Young Ones and Blackadder, as well as a number of not-so-critically acclaimed musicals and books, said in an interview with a Christian magazine, The Third Way, "The BBC let gags about vicars pass, but they wouldn't let one about an imam get through." Ooh, bit of politics, bit of aggro. And finally, a pity for the rest of us, but it's been a good week for Lily Allen, after BBC Three controller Danny Cohen said that her interactive chat show will return for a second series. Lily Allen and Friends was a key part of the youth station's relaunch in February. Says the press release, it combines Lily interviewing celeb guests with a risque mix of clips from the internet, such as YouTube sensations The Gay Barbie Boys. Newsnight, it ain't, but those Barbie Boys, whoa.
Let no more be said about the Gay Barbie Boys. Let's go through a few of those more serious topics. It's been an excellent week, apparently, for Rupert Murdoch, because David Cameron, Steve, in his new policy document for the Tories, new broadcasting policy document, says that news impartiality rules should be relaxed. What do you make of that? Do you think they should be?
Well, I don't have a problem with news and current affairs being other than impartial, provided that's what it says it is. And as part of the mixture, I really don't have a problem with that. I think we're all grown ups; we can sort of deal with it. I do, however, think that the requirement to be impartial, or to strive for impartiality, should extend beyond the BBC. It should extend to all the public service broadcasters.
It should.
I think it's to the public service broadcasters. Yes, it should.
So we've got Sky News.
Sky News is not a public service broadcaster.
You'd be happy
formally
for them
speaking.
To, yes.
Well, they can look. They're a commercial operation. As far as I can say, they can do what they like. As it happens, I think they found the place that they have found and built the reputation that they have built in the TV news business by striving for impartiality. If you were Sky News, you would abandon it at your peril, I think.
You can't legislate, though, John Plunkett, for newsreaders falling pregnant just after they're hired. Though,
yeah, that was bad luck, wasn't it? Yes.
I think you'll find that Chris Shaw couldn't be happier. Yeah. Couldn't be happier.
They're going to rename the bulletin Five News Without Natasha Kaplinsky. And yes. Make sure that's on the EPG.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure they were biking round crates of champagne. When the Daily Mirror article came out.
That's right. At least we stopped talking about her hair now and start talking about her pregnancy. That's so we've
right.
moved on.
We have indeed. There's a few other stories around this week. And ITV, Steve, has announced that it's sort of rowing back on the story about cutting all their regional news programmes. Now they're not going to cut all their regional news programmes.
Well, I think right? there's an important bit of context here. The new minister, Andy Burnham.
So
has, you know, was saying this week how much he's from Liverpool. He's a North West MP. Saying how much he enjoyed Granada Reports and, you know, what a shame it would be if ITV really went as far as it was proposing to in sort of cutting back on its regional obligations. There's a bit of context here, which is that, you know, Grade has come up with pretty well the same plan that Charles Allen had to restrict them, to cut down the number of regions in order to save £35-40 million a year. That's generating quite a lot of, you know, backbench, especially Labour antagonism, because there's a lot of history here with Granada having played the regional card so persuasively when it sought to prevent Carlton from merging with United,
yes,
with Lord Hollingsley. So it goes some way back. But the other thing is there's a bit of context here, which is that the PSB review, the new one, which is published next week, I think.
I thought we just had a PSB review.
Oh, well, they
seem to go on.
They're like London buses, these things. Nevertheless, the PSB review is going to throw into sharp relief questions about how you provide or how you deliver plurality in the provision of regional news. And if ITV is not going to do it, someone else is going to do it. And ITV must now be starting to think or getting slightly worried about what Ed Richards said at his RTS speech the other week when he said it's now up to them to decide whether they want to be public service broadcasters or not. And he said, if they, in answer to a question, do I say it from me, if they choose not to be public service broadcasters, they stand now in the short term to lose quite a lot. For example, all their gifted spectrum.
Well, yes, which is very valuable still.
So ITV is now starting to think, hang on a second, we're going to have to start playing this game slightly differently. No longer Charles Allen simply, look, give us the cash or the kid gets it. We'll just drop our licences and move on. They're now trying to play a more subtle game. And my interpretation of this news move, which inevitably is more words than reality, it's about how you put it.
Yes.
That's about trying to play this game a bit more cleverly, because they're now facing up to the fact that if they're not careful, they could lose something rather valuable.
Going back to the print side of things, John, did you read that extraordinary piece in The Times with Felix Dennis?
as the alleged, I'm not quite sure what we can call him now, but the alleged for a day, 24 yes. hours,
well,
alleged killer.
He claimed himself. I mean, I think it's perfectly reasonable to say, because it's been reported, that he said, and he doesn't deny having said it, what he denies is that he actually did it.
Yeah.
So what he said was, I think three or four bottles of...
At least you'd have thought.
Claret.
The third or fourth bottle.
Is it each?
I'm still quite coherent after five or six, frankly. That he said, Felix Dennis, who owns... was a magazine entrepreneur, obviously. And he said that he'd pushed a man off a cliff. Was it an argument about a woman or something?
That's right. He'd done someone wrong, I think, to use Felix's turn of phrase.
I see. And then Ginny Dugree, who's the star interviewer, the Lynn Barber of the Times, she then wrote it all up. And despite the fact that he then contacted... She gave him a lot of opportunity, apparently, after a few more bottles of wine, to retract what he'd said, but he didn't. But then he did email her the next day and say that it wasn't true, but she printed it anyway. What do you think about the journalistic ethics of it?
Well, I think if he said it and she gave him the chance to take it back during the interview, I mean, I think you'd certainly include it. Yeah, you couldn't possibly leave that out of the interview. I mean, the fact that he emailed the next day instead of ringing up, I think if I'd done that, I possibly would have made the effort to put a call in rather than just sending an email in case the interview was away from her desk.
I think you could certainly report it and you could certainly include it, but yeah. I haven't read her interview with him.
Well, she explained all that in it, didn't she?
I don't know. She went on to say, but he then withdrew it. If you use that to allege that a murder has actually taken place, then that would seem to me to be a bit over the top.
Yes.
But reported the fact that he said it and then withdrew it, that's different.
Hmm. Okay, well, we'll leave that there and hope that the lawyers aren't listening.
Perhaps he'll write a poem about it.
Perhaps he will. He writes terrible poems.
And they were on a cliff. Did he drive them to the cliff first, or did they just happen to be talking about this on a cliff?
I think we need more details.
We do, don't we? Yeah.
This is the thing. This is what Ginny Dugree didn't get. She didn't get all the details.
It's a single drama coming up, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Remember that for the very best news and analysis from the worlds of print, broadcast and online, you can get all of that at mediaguardian.co.uk. Now, we're about to switch gears to radio, so while we fiddle with the dial, here's an ad.
On this week's Tech Weekly, Tanya Byron breaks down the content of the government's independent review into the effects of video games and social networking sites on kids and young people. We meet a man whose company makes sure that there's enough bandwidth for even the biggest websites and downloads. And we welcome DontStayIn.com's George Thatcher into the lift for our elevator pitch. We also talk the news, the blogs, and what's been happening on our Facebook group page. That's on this week's Tech Weekly, available every Tuesday from guardian.co.uk/audio.
Welcome back. Now, there have been two fairly sizable radio stories this week. GCAP was finally bought out by Global Radio, and Evan Davis punched in and out as a fully-fledged member of Radio 4's Today programme presenter team. John Plunkett is Media Guardian's radio correspondent. We'll get on to GCAP and Global in a moment, John, but let's start with Evan Davis, because you were up with the Dawn Chorus in your Jim Jams, live blogging his debut. Now, wasn't this taking live blogging to a bit of an extreme? I know that our live blogging of The Apprentice is very popular, and our minute-by-minute coverage of World Championship football or whatever it is, like Premiership.
Very
games,
popular.
Very popular also. But live blogging the Today programme.
6 a.m.
6 a.m.
I think I've got to carve out my own niche.
Yeah.
And this is one of the few areas left that aren't blogged alive.
Okay.
So I think it was me and literally several people, certainly at 6 o'clock. So you can get away with anything at that time. You should have seen what we had up there briefly.
Really? Yeah. What did you make of Evan Davis?
I thought he was okay. I think there's so much affection out there for him because he's an interesting guy, a talented guy, and he's made economics very interesting over the last couple of years, and is a great on-screen presence. Everyone wanted him to do really well, and the problem was that he didn't do especially well. But I think
I think, to be honest, he did pretty poorly. If we're being harsh about it, and you're not being harsh.
That's my reservoir of goodwill, you see, still bubbling to the surface.
But I thought he did all sorts of things. He crashed the pips, and he did an interview, but two big interviews that he did, which were really quite ill-informed and poorly done. The GM Foods one, which you would have thought that would be right up his street. No, there was another economics-type interview which he didn't seem to have a handle on either. And I thought, I felt really bad because I wanted him to do well as well.
Yeah. I think it shows how difficult it is going from someone who's used to answering the questions to asking the questions, possibly.
Perhaps it was slightly unfair that they roasted him with John Humphreys both days.
Yeah, you can imagine a slightly looming presence across the desk.
Well, put yourself... I mean, come on, he must have been crapping himself.
I think he probably was.
I mean, really. I mean,
he sounded very nervous.
Well, look, and, you know, he's a very experienced broadcaster, and he's... Yeah. I know him a bit, and I know that I'm pretty sure that when this opportunity came up, he thought very hard about whether he should do it or not. Mm. In the sense that, you know, he's built a real presence for himself on TV. He really likes what he does on TV, and so on and so on and so on. And he, you know... So this is a really big move for him. It's one of those, you know, you can't turn it down. If it comes up, you kind of got to take it. You're occupying the seat that was once there for sort of Jack DeManio.
Yeah.
This reverberates around the heads of even people as accomplished as him.
And, of course, last year when he was standing in on Holiday Relief, it wasn't announced and there was no big sort of fanfare. And when he did it, he was great and there was no pressure. But I guess this time... Yeah. Bit more pressure.
He'll have to grow into it.
Yeah, I'm sure he will. Let's move on to Global. They finally, this has gone on for quite a long time, hasn't it, John?
It has, yes. It's been a long romance.
Yes, for £375 million?
That's right. Yeah.
Lots of implications for DAB and the commercial radio landscape. But let's be clear about who's bought whom, because these big radio groups now, that their names are rather divorced from the actual stations that they own. So who are Global?
Oh, so Global are the radio group previously known as Chrysalis, which is home to stations like Heart, Galaxy, and in London, talk station LBC.
Okay, and they're run by?
Well, Chairman Charles Allen and Chief Exec Ashley Tabor.
Okay,
and you might know him, the Fame Academy headmaster.
Richard Park.
Richard Park.
Is he involved as well?
He is involved. He's sort of a programming chief at Global, so he'll be marching into Capital, which is his old stamping ground,
which is
part of GCAP.
Gruesome twosome, isn't there? So so GCAP, so there, that's Capital and...
Classic FM, as you say, Capital, Choice.
Steve Charles Allen gets the chance to run down another part of the British media industry. Fantastic, eh?
The Capital Cafe is coming back.
He's a glutton for punishment, isn't he?
What do you think this... What does it mean, John, for being serious for a minute, for the commercial radio kind of landscape?
I think the top line is it's a good thing because it brings an end to the uncertainty over GCAP, which has sort of dogged it for the best part of 3 years, ever since the merger of the ill-fated merger of GWR and Capital. And it's a good thing because it creates a generally kind of big beast in the commercial radio world with 90-odd stations and a 40% share of the commercial radio market. But it all depends what happens next. Some radio insiders have sort of questioned possibly there isn't necessarily lots of heavyweight talent at the top of the global management chain. And it depends who they bring in.
I think, last time I looked, I thought Charles Allen was pretty heavy. Looked pretty heavy to me, but you know, there you go.
But look, you can see this as an ad sales proposition.
Yes,
the idea of getting your hands on a radio portfolio that big would be sort of droolingly attractive. You'd start dribbling at the prospect of it, or Charles would.
Yes,
but it's an ad sales proposition.
Right,
this has got sort of all sort of the echoes of, you know, ITV, which, you know, ceased to have anything to do with what it started as. And, you know, the critical question is going to be, it's going to be the content, isn't it? There's only so much engineering you can do around an ad sales proposition, which is no doubt what is uppermost in Charles's mind, and no doubt that very well thought through, and that's why their takeover has succeeded, and so on and so on. But in the end, it's got to be the programmes.
And the
it?
Problems that commercial radio has had, and in particular, I mentioned DAB radio as well.
The
problem that they've had is the content, isn't it? And the lack of investment therein.
That's right. I mean, if you look at their London stations, for instance, they've got this particular group now. The new Global has got Capital, it's got Heart, it's got Choice, which may be reinvented as their dance station, Galaxy, in London. At the moment, Ofcom rules preclude any kind of major league syndication across different stations, across different local stations. Certainly at breakfast, it's barred. So in terms of getting big names and attracting big names by offering them national propositions, at the moment that's not an option, unless you look at digital. But digital is a different question, and it's still got very low audience numbers at the moment.
Well, you mentioned digital, and interestingly, Fru Haslett, the chief executive of GCAP, she recently spoke out about DAB, and she was very downbeat about the future for DAB as far as GCAP is concerned. Will that change now that Global's taken over?
Yeah, I think Global are going to be marginally more optimistic about DAB than Fru Haslett was. Fru announced the sale of Digital One, which is their national digital platform, on DAB, Digital Audio Broadcasting. And that's on hold now. And certainly, although there's been no word from Global, people within the industry are saying that they're actually going to keep hold of Digital One.
Cynics might say, Steve, that it was just a ruse to drive down drive up the amount of money that GCAP was going to offer.
I don't think so. Looking at the GCAP, the way DAB has gone for GCAP is they've launched all these stations, and what they've done is they've fragmented their own audience and fragmented their own revenues, and so it's increased their cost base right? For no net increase in audience, or not a very big one, and certainly no net increase in revenues. So the problem for DAB is there at the moment. There is no commercial model that supports it. It hasn't expanded radio listening except via the BBC services. We don't have to conform to the same commercial rules. And you may say thank God for that, but nevertheless that's the case. So I think the commercial outlook for DAB is really, really challenging, and it won't be any less challenging for Charles Allen and Global. This is utterly off the top of my head, but you know, Charles did very, very well out of his relationship with Tessa Jowell.
Yeah.
He was very close to the government, and he secured...
The Blair regime.
Well, yes, he was. But the last thing the government would want now is for the DAB proposition to collapse in a heap. It seemed to me that the biggest consequence of Fru Hazlitt's comments, leave aside the nuts and bolts, was it raised the possibility, and Channel 4 went into a complete funk over it.
They're still in a funk about it.
It raised the possibility that DAB might just go... If that happened, that would be very embarrassing. So for Charles to come along now with Global and say, no, hang on a minute, we're rather more positive about it, that's a pretty shrewd move.
Steve, you mentioned Channel 4, and John, the word is that we'll hear very soon about whether they are indeed going to go ahead with Channel 4 radio or not, because that's what they're going to have to decide, isn't it?
Yeah, and you'd think possibly... certainly there's going to be more delays to come, and possibly even sort of 50-50 that it goes ahead.
Yeah, well, I think
Channel 4 are in a really difficult position now, because initially they said that they were going to finance their radio stations, and in particular the speech station, the competitor to Radio 4.
Through syndication, through selling the...
First of all, Natalie said they were going to transform the radio advertising sales market, but that was never forthcoming in detail. They then said, no, what they were going to do, they were going to pay for it through the revenue, in part at least, through the revenues generated by renting out space on the multiplex. Now, when you've got another multiplex, a digital one, sitting there with now no stations
in trouble,
in trouble, with the price of spectrum on the DAB, in the DAB spectrum, must have dropped. The economics of Channel 4's proposition, even if they can get everyone onto their multiplex just because people want to be around Channel 4, the price they're going to pay for it must at some point go down.
Well, it's a pretty straightforward equation, isn't it?
You would think so. And that's, I think, was Maggie Brown, you know, very correctly reported that there was a rumpus at the board, the Channel 4 board, about how they were going to pay for it. I don't see any obvious reason for that rumpus to have gone away. And in the context of Channel 4 asking for a public subvention to run their existing television services, it's pretty rich for them to then say, oh, by the way, we're going to spend another, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60, however many million pounds on radio.
I always feel that when we're talking about commercial radio, we should point out that Guardian Media Group owns GMG Radio, which publishes mediaguardian.co.uk, which pays for this podcast.
So they do. But not very much, as far as I'm concerned. In fact, nothing.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, John and Steve. You can follow this story over at mediaguardian.co.uk/radio.
Media Talk with Matt Wells on guardian.co.uk.
Much gratitude to Steve Hewlett and John Plunkett. They've gone, but here is Gareth McLean. Hello. We haven't seen you for a while.
No, I've been off. I've been applying for a new job.
Have you?
Yeah.
What, at rival media organisations?
Yes, I have. So I'm either going to be... the editor of the New Statesman.
Yes. Well, they've been having difficulty finding an editor.
No, that's why they'd resort to me.
No one else wants the job. An opportunity.
Yeah. I do have an opportunity, yes.
But I think you're too right-wing to be editor of the New Statesman.
Do you? How about president of Zimbabwe?
You could be, yes. We've got Sky News on in the background. It looks like he's on the way.
They need one, don't they?
Yes. But I think the colour of your skin might preclude you. You know,
racist.
Well, no, it's all going back to colonial white rule. It's not
right.
Oh,
no.
Anyway, you're a lot friendlier than the current lot. Anyway, what we're going to talk about.
I've been listening to Evan Davis in the morning.
Have you? We were talking about Evan Davis earlier on, I thought it wasn't that good.
Oh, do you know, I think John Humphreys is rubbish.
yes.
Not well, for the first time that I've woken to the dulcet tones of Evan Davis.
Is that right? Gareth. I think we'll just leave your private life there, Gareth McLean. What about the British Soap Awards?
Oh, yes. I was off being a judge on that last week. Very exciting. 10th anniversary.
So which panel were you judging?
All of the ones that aren't public votes.
All right.
So most spectacular scene. Best exit.
The great thing about the British Soap Awards.
Beautiful warm entrance.
I thought we'd finished talking about everything.
Oh, no.
Is that they have these fantastic names for categories.
They do indeed. It's very good. And we take it very seriously, actually. There's a sort of a panel of soap experts and the producers of each of the main soaps, Hollyoaks, Doctors, EastEnders, Coronation Street and Emmerdale.
But
and
do they not end up voting for their own things?
No, they're not allowed to. Okay. And there's a very grown-up discussion that takes all day and we eat a lot of biscuits.
And, of course, big news in Soapland.
Yes.
Ricky and Bianca.
Ricky and Bianca are back, which has done very well for EastEnders.
I don't watch EastEnders, so I didn't watch the episode, but I can't get away from the bloody trails.
Oh, the Jackson 5.
Can you please tell me what that's about, that trail?
Well, it's to alert you to the things going on in the
but
square.
Does it relate to anything that happens? A storyline, for example?
Well, they're back, I think. It's more of a sort of lateral kind of thing.
A bit too lateral for me.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a risky strategy bringing back old characters because it can just seem a bit nostalgic and looking back to some sort of golden age in the show.
Yeah,
but I think with these two, I mean, basically with the return of Bianca and her many children, one of whom isn't actually hers, it's this sort of Carol Jackson reinvented. So they're bringing in new characters with the old characters. So they very much have to be a sort of Trojan horse, introducing new ones.
And why is it that they've decided to do this? Is it because EastEnders was
desperation? No, I mean, I think they've done really. I mean, EastEnders is sort of. It is the show that people are talking about since Christmas, and it's gained that momentum finally.
And God knows who's been slagging it off.
There's more to EastEnders is the new tagline or newish tagline.
I see,
and it's got a bit of energy to it that wasn't there before. And I think Patsy Palmer as Bianca brings a certain exuberance.
She certainly does.
To the square.
Well, I mentioned the trailers, and the last trailer I saw was when I was just turning on BBC One, which doesn't happen very often, to watch The Apprentice, the laundry episode.
Oh, yes. I didn't see that one, though. Well, you're obviously too busy watching Bravo.
Yes, clearly. But apparently I read in the Daily Star, which I read quite a lot.
When you're not watching BBC One.
that Sir Alan Sugar has become the number one turn-on for Britain's gays.
Oh, shall we find one and ask?
can't find any.
For Britain's gays.
None of those.
I say to everyone at the Daily Star, you should go on strike. Ignore that email from Don Neeson.
Yes, it's from the heart, though.
From the heart. No, it's from the space where there was a heart once. She had it removed by Richard Desmond.
Yes. Anyway, enough of...
Yes. No, I didn't see... is he the top turn-on for Britain's gays? Is that, oh shit, we can't put a Madeleine McCann story on the front.
Probably.
Let's make something else up instead.
As I expect it was.
Yeah.
Doctor Who.
Yes, back.
That's certainly...
From a place called Nowhere.
Doctor Who starts on the news.
Yeah.
Starts on Saturday.
It's been trailed once or twice.
It has been trailed once or twice.
I've seen one or two of the radio times. Other listings, magazines are available. Commemorative covers. So, I saw a terrible interview with Russell on BBC Breakfast.
Oh, right.
That show is...
This is Russell T. Davies.
Tripe.
Yes. Awful, isn't it?
Just bad.
Who presents it? Is it
Bill Turnbull and someone Minchin?
Louise Minchin. Yeah.
To the day job if I were you, Louise, appears to be working in Tesco.
It's not been the same since Natasha Kaminski left.
No. I bet.
Congratulations
to her. Commiserations to Five, who are now thinking, bloody hell, we've got to put her out on maternity leave now and still pay her.
dear. Anyway, sorry, we were talking about Doctor Who.
Yes, we were. Yes,
so
shows once or twice.
Starts on Saturday.
Very exciting.
Bad interview with Russell T. Davies, the creator, on Breakfast. Why was it bad?
Well, it's just they were badly prepared. It was bad clips.
But he has courted a bit of controversy.
Well, yeah, he's complaining already before it's gone out that
the scheduling,
because it's earlier, less people will watch.
Fewer
people. Mm. Yes, less audience.
Less audience, fewer people. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm over in Grammarian's corner.
What's his reasoning for this? Because it's on earlier, so there's fewer people watching television.
I don't know. Less people will have been born. I don't quite understand the mysteries of scheduling. But surely if it's good, people will find it.
Yes. But is this maybe getting your defence in early that this series is not so good as the last one?
I don't know. There's been a lot of rumbling and, there was a lot of sort of hoo-ha about Catherine Tate being the new assistant and how, she was lacking in charm and she wasn't in the traditional mould of the kind of eye candy for the dads and stuff. I think she's quite attractive, but that's neither here nor there.
What would you know?
Yeah, well, exactly. I love Alan Sugar. I mean, the stories seem like good stories. There's an Agatha Christie one coming up. There's The Fires of Pompeii, which I hear from someone who's seen it, is in the same league as the Pyramids of Mars.
That's quite...
Whatever that means. I think that's a Tom Baker one, but I don't really remember. Yes, but we shall see. I'm a bit concerned that the Doctor's developing a sort of messianic complex.
Well,
and one wouldn't want Russell T. Davies to develop the same.
Well, no, quite. Well, David Tennant is developing a bit of a messianic complex of his own. I don't know if you've seen him on any of the... shows that he's been taking part in. He was on the Friday Night Project and treating himself as God, practically.
Really?
And And then Russell T Davies apparently has been rewriting everybody's scripts.
Well,
I read.
That would explain why his own have been a little bit below par of late.
Well, maybe he shouldn't. Maybe he could do some rewriting of his own. Yeah. Okay, time to draw things to a close. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about, Gareth? Is
no, thank you.
Okay, how's your blog been going?
Oh, it's been going lovelily. Thank you. My blog on Monday, I will be doing a review of Doctor Who, I think.
Okay.
And inviting comments at blogs.guardian.co.uk/blogs.guardianmclean.com.
No. It's actually blogs.guardian.co.uk/TV.
Thank you very much, Matt.
You're welcome. So head to that blog if you want to comment on Gareth McLean, and head to our one if you want to comment on any of the topics we've discussed, or you can post a comment on our Facebook wall. Thanks to all of our panellists this week, to Steve Hewlett, John Plunkett, and to Gareth McLean. Media Talk is produced by Ben Green. I'm Matt Wells. See you next time. Goodbye. The Guardian.